Great, recording is on. David, it's over to you.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Especially Interesting podcast from Academy. I'm your co-host, David Gray Hammond, and I'm here with my co-host, Tigger Pritchard. Say hello, Tigger.
Hi, and just remembering, so tonight I am a white male, shaven head. Oh God, black top. No, navy top. Maroon kind of shirt, some underwear. It's England, and I want to say mid-50s, but it's actually mid to late-ish 50s. But it's great to be here, and I'm a little bit excited because our topic tonight is wow, and David is going to definitely keep me in control and calm, and we have an amazing guest who's come back, and I cannot wait. But back to young David.
Tell you what, Tigger, I'll keep you under control if you keep me under control, okay? We'll do
That's
some
fine.
reciprocal stuff here. But yeah, for description purposes, I, not just tonight, but in fact every night, I'm a white person. And I'm wearing thick-rimmed glasses. I've got a shaved head and a beard, a lip piercing, and an ear tunnel on my left ear. I'm wearing a kind of blotchy black and grey hoodie next to a bookcase in a very blue room. And tonight we're here with our guest, who is a returning guest. And I think you'll all remember him coming on and talking about yo-yos. That was actually a fascinating episode because I did not know there was so much to know about yo-yos. So I'm really looking forward to getting into this one. Tonight, because it's a topic that I love. So, to our dear guest, who are you and what are we talking about tonight?
Well, hello, and I'm glad to be back. My name is Spencer Hunley, and yes, last time I was here, I got to info dump about yo-yos, which is definitely one of my major interests. Also, a major interest to my wallet because there were sales over the Black Friday online. So, also was kept up by today's topic because I am a huge fan. Just for visual description purposes, I am also a I'm a white male with a full brown beard, thinning brown hair on top. Currently, right now, I'm actually wearing a beige sweater with a gray knit beanie or cap, whichever way you want to describe it. And I am actually at my local university in the library. In a small secluded space with a very plain white wall behind me. So I am very pleased to be here and I cannot wait to dive in on this subject.
Oh,
Oh.
coffee. Coffee. The smiles on mine and Tigger's faces right now. Like you have to understand, coffee is it's not just something we've invited Spencer on to talk about. This is our special interest as well. This is a shared special interest amongst all three of us. So this is going to be a good episode, I think.
So there is so much to talk about. So I think really, Spencer, if you would be okay to kind of give us your history with coffee, does that make sense? Where it started, where you got the passion for it, are you okay with that?
Oh, absolutely. I will try to keep that to a limit, but I initially was not a fan of coffee. Growing up, we Folgers was kind of the brand you would use. And Folgers is that blue collar working person's, brand of coffee. It does the job, but there's not a lot of flavor dimension to it. It's bitter. You take it as a way to get through the day. It is contrary to the slogan. It is not the best part of waking up, but it is part of waking up. We actually had a Folgers roasting plant in my hometown. I'm in Kansas City, Missouri, here in the States. And really, the best part of that plant was you would drive into downtown and you could actually smell the coffee being roasted as you drove in, which was a very welcome smell. As I got older, I actually went to a local coffee shop for the first time. I was actually looking for a job. I was fresh out of high school and going to college. And I met the owner of that coffee shop and he introduced me to coffee in its most beautiful flavor form, the various dimensions of that flavor. And I got to taste what coffee is supposed to taste like. Not just a bitter, just, acidic liquid, but so many different earthy and fruity tones and maybe a little bit of brown sugar hints and other things, just so much to it. And I was just so enamored. I was curious, not only because I felt like people didn't know and I wasn't told, but also I wanted to know more. So my first big experience with coffee was working at a local coffee shop, brewing up coffee drinks, making espresso, and learning all the different coffee smells. One of my favorite moments was what was called the smelly box, which is it has 16 different little oil vials, and you're memorizing the different scents of coffee and the different tastes of coffee through that smelly box. So you'd smell it and try to identify what that flavor was. And it was part of my education in becoming a barista at this place. So there was also in the 16, there's 12 you want, and there are 4 you don't want. And 2 of them that I remember the most that you don't want in coffee was one of them was the astringent taste of cleaner, like a soap almost. And the other one was burning tires. And that one was the easiest one to remember because of how horrid it was. So if you ever taste a coffee and you're like, wow, this tastes almost rubbery, it is a sign that they've done something bad to the beans. They're almost over roasted in something, but there were other beautiful flavors that I enjoyed. And ever since then, I've just been totally hooked on it, exploring different ways to brew coffee and finding people that I connect with that also enjoy our particular chemical drink is phenomenal. So
I've just looked up. Do you say pronounce it Folgers?
Yes, Folgers. It was a major coffee brand, especially through the 90s. It still is in the U.S. But it's found mostly in grocery stores, and it was kind of an economic choice. You could buy an entire big old tin of it, and it was pretty cheap. I tried it at home, and my dad would have it, and I just thought I found it terrible. I was like, this doesn't smell the way it tastes. When you're driving downtown, it smells wonderful. When you drink it, it's not the same taste. And I was able to figure that out. Yeah,
I think it's to me. I mean, I've got that tagline you said about the best thing about waking up is the smell of the best part of waking up is the Folgers in your cup. That bit is the tagline. To me, it reminds me of the brands we get on UK shelves, which is just off the shelf, glass jar job, whatever supermarket it is. That's what it reminds me of. Though I must confess, it looks a pretty nice jar. But yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So these days, honestly, in my area, my hometown of Kansas City, Missouri, there is a large number of excellent coffee shops and locally roasted beans. Our coffee scene has grown just very rapidly to the point where we actually had a fun moment with Starbucks. And by fun moment, I mean very antagonistic. We had a local coffee shop. It still exists, called Broadway Cafe. Wonderful coffee shop, all kinds of people there. It's fantastic, very well known. Well, Starbucks wanted a piece of that market because it was so well attended and a lot of people would go there. So they opened a shop literally right next door. And everyone got so upset. Everyone was so upset with just this blatant grab at customers that it was boycotted. And within a year, that Starbucks location was out of business and they moved on.
Good.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
It was fantastic. Good. So hopefully that explains.
Throwing this out there, but Starbucks, their coffee is not good, in my opinion. I'm trying to put this very lightly, but I cannot stand Starbucks coffee.
Oh no, it's they're much more of the colder drink or your more of the coffee cocktail. Because I've had their drip coffee, and I like you said, I'm not a fan. It's disappointing, really.
It is. And I do, I work within the community. I do lots of meetings and so on. And I'm much more open now. I used to be in the past. I was much more, masking Tigger, really. Was, oh, yeah, that'd be a great coffee shop. I'll meet you there. Now I go, I'm really sorry. I dislike personal preference. I just like Starbucks. I just like Costa. There's this independent place I go to. Can we meet there? Or now I've got my portable coffee machine, which we might speak of later on. I'll take that with me. Because as we said before, for me, a bad coffee experience can completely and utterly dysregulate me for the day and really actually heighten my anxiety levels and everything. And I've experienced that over the years. So I fully agree with you. And I'm so glad that those awesome folks boycotted Starbucks and shut it down. There's similar stories for some places here in Devon, in England, where, you know, in small little like popular areas, they tried to open and they just, you know, the locals just went, we don't want you. We've got coffee shops that are really great. We don't want you. So I love that bit of people power, so to speak, which is really important. So I suspect origins wise, I mean, you know, my parents didn't drink coffee. I think mom might have had something naff, but they weren't coffee drinkers. Welsh, they were tea drinkers, yeah. And it wasn't until I think I was met my peers and I think my first girlfriend was like European in terms of like Scandinavian based, and they drank a lot of coffee. And that's where I had my first coffee and got my first coffee set from. And my brother, especially as well, drank coffee, but it wasn't something I drank at home as a kid. It was something that I developed into as I grew older. Really, David, how about you, journey wise?
I first fell in love with coffee when I was 12 years old, arguably maybe a bit too young for caffeine, but, you know, I've never been one for the rules. And actually, it was instant coffee I started off on because we were growing up below the poverty line, and my grandmother loved coffee. She'd drink it all the time. Probably shouldn't have. She had quite a serious heart condition. But I always remember, because I inherited this mug when she sadly passed away. She had a Toblerone mug that was triangular in shape. The whole mug was a triangle. And I will always remember this mug up until the day that it sadly broke, which was some 20 years later. I remember drinking coffee out of this mug for the first time. And we had instant coffee in the house, but it was good instant coffee. If, you know, by instant coffee standards, it was like Douwe Egberts or something along those lines. I can't remember. We're talking a couple of decades ago now. And I remember just being blown away by it. I drunk tea as a child. I loved tea. But something about coffee, I couldn't really put my finger on what it was. It was astounding. It was like a moment of instantly falling in love with something.
Well, for me, and go on, David.
I was going to say that it was when I moved out of home, and I moved from the south coast to Yorkshire, and up there I started going to coffee shops and I started trying proper coffee, as I call it. You know, whether proper beans, where you ground them yourself, or the coffee shop would roast and grind them themselves, and all of a sudden it was like, wow, coffee is more than just this sort of bitter taste. I couldn't believe all the different flavors in it, and I very quickly realized I wasn't a fan of the big chains. Although if I had to pick a chain in the UK, there's two that I go to, which is Monmouth and Boston Tea Party. Both of those do some fantastic coffee in my experience, albeit expensive coffee. But I remember it was just amazing because all the flavors and the different ways that it was prepared, and even the whole beans, they different types of beans looked different, and I was just drawn in by it. It was fascinating, and I went away and I was learning about how coffee grows best in the tropics, and you know, it was just and different areas of the world because of the different soil types and that creating different types of beans, and I couldn't get enough of it. And then I remember it was about 4 years ago. I was in London, and my friend, at the time, he turned around to me and said, I know this coffee shop in London Bridge, and it's amazing coffee, and we should go. And it was a Monmouth coffee shop. And we went in, and I ordered a macchiato. And I have been besotted with Monmouth coffee ever since. to the point that whenever I have the money, I will go away, and because they sell it online, you can buy their beans online, and I'll buy them like a kilo at a time, because I know when I have that coffee, I'm going to be drinking it constantly, so I need as much of the beans as I can. And it, because all of their beans at Monmouth are seasonal, so you get different beans at different times of the year. And I suddenly was exploring this world of different flavors through Monmouth coffee. And I was even taking note of when I ground the beans, like the different smells, and it was incredible. And I very quickly learned actually that the coffee I like most is a medium dark to dark roast. I like that really full-bodied kind of bitter taste. I might add a teaspoon of raw cane sugar, which they also sell on the Monmouth website. And yeah, it oh that that's my that's where my love affair with coffee has really started, to be
I
honest.
think what's
David.
interesting here is the cultural bit as well. For in terms of Spencer's, I'm just going to get this in. I mean, coffee came to England like centuries ago, yeah. But there's a lot of people that say the explosion upon the high street literally came because of friends and because of Central Perk and all the rest of it. There's an awful lot of people that and debate the fact that our high street suddenly exploded with coffee shops because of that phenomenal success of friends at the time. And before then, it literally was, unless you were in the bigger cities and the specialist quarters, the coffee shops and tea shops, it was, Nescafe, all that kind of jazz you'd get off the shelf, like the coffee you first mentioned. But for us, very much so, I think the growth occurred because of, it just became something that took over the high street. So was it something that, were the specialist kind of areas always around where you are, Spencer, or was that kind of like, was that linked to friends as well, maybe, if you see what I mean?
We actually, I hate to give the large corporate pariah credit. However, Starbucks did do there is, and this debate has been talked about in many coffee communities here in the States. But with Starbucks' growth, the fact that you had these beautiful, although they were cookie cutter, these beautiful coffee environments where you could come in, you could sit down, and you could just chill out. That did provide a conducive environment for other coffee chain or coffee shops to kind of grow, because we didn't have really much in the way of those at all until Starbucks kind of started to take off. And that kind of response to Starbucks really kind of paved the way for those. I don't know if friends had that much of a play into it. I think it did play some role. I will definitely, own up to that. I'm sure it probably had some part of it. But I remember as Starbucks kind of grew, people were like, oh, this is interesting. These are nice places. But then it was, we can do better. There was always this, all the coffee nuts around the area were like, we have way better coffees, right? Like there's other stuff you can have. And there's even something called the caffeine crawl here in the States, where they will actually have people go around to different coffee shops and try different things they've made and other things. And it's just a phenomenal little event. So I will give some credit probably to friends, I guess, but the phenomenon did kind of get started by a retaliation or response to the corporate coffee culture, at least. So, because people didn't know there was something besides what was on your grocery store shelves, they had no idea. And with Starbucks kind of infiltrating into places and spreading across the country, they kind of opened that market up a little bit. So, I hate to give that credit, but it is something that is
Well,
absolutely
you
true.
can understand it will be. I was very lucky, David. You said Boston Tea Party. I was so lucky that there was a Boston Tea Party in Truro where I lived at the time. Because that it's Truro is a long, long way away from London, right? It's completely the other end of the country, hundreds and hundreds of miles away. Even before the big coffee places came, there was a Boston Tea Party here. It went sadly quite early on after the coffee shops claimed, but some Indian, other independents there as well. So I was really lucky, and I was really lucky as well that I had. Like Scandinavian influence on my brother who traveled, their influences around coffee. Thank God, because otherwise my coffee taste would have been really bad, I expect. But I'm lucky. But it is interesting. I remember somebody saying to me, just exploded. And it may have been then certainly led by the likes of, Costa and Starbucks, certainly. But the fact you've got coffee shops that will fight to bring proper coffee in is beautiful.
I was wanting to know from both of you, do you have a favorite growing region or kind of a country or two that you would prefer as far as coffee are concerned? I know, David, you brought up the level of roast you enjoyed, but is there a specific region that you would prefer more than others or a series of them?
I find myself drinking Brazilian coffee quite a lot, like Brazilian beans, like an awful lot. I don't know if it's because I prefer them, but somehow it just always seems to be where my beans are from.
Excellent. What about you, Tigger?
I'm going through the process of buying from different manufacturers, from local roasters who get their beans from different areas. So I'm going through more of a roast exploration and trying. I mean, Monmouth, I adore. And first, obviously, came across them in London and order online from them. Thankfully, there's a shop in Truro that has them there. So when I go to Truro, I get beans. But I'm actually starting to buy beans from a lot of the local roasters because you get a better quality. So for me, a bit of South America and stuff like that, I quite like. And I flip between dark and light roasts as well. At the moment, I am going for the experimental stage. I think of just looking what's out there, and when I've got the money free, trying some, because coffee's very expensive. Trying the different roasts that are out there, and enjoying that exploration.
Absolutely, yeah. I am drawn to, oddly enough, actually, I have. Oddly, you mentioned Brazil and Latin America. I have a bag of Brazilian, and I have a bag of a Guatemala blend as well from local place. I generally like a lot of African coffees. Kenya is one of my favorites, but definitely Latin America has some really good stuff that I also enjoy. I would say those are my primary ones I would usually go to, but I don't leave too many things out. There's some Indian Sulawesi that is I've had, and it's phenomenal, but they don't get it in very often. It's one of those little special treat ones. I'm like, oh, I love it, but it doesn't always come in. So yeah, I'm with you both. Definitely. I could live on Brazilian probably for the rest of my days.
And this is one of the things I love about coffee, though, is because if you are into coffee, it gives you that mutual interest with people. It's something to talk about. There is a whole social scene based on coffee. And it's not just about going to coffee shops, although I do love the atmosphere in like independent coffee shops. There's just something about them that's just like I'm home. But it's nice to connect with people over a mutual interest in coffee, because it's one of the least controversial interests you can have when you're talking about a lot of the coffees that we enjoy now. Because I know historically coffees had some awful raps with exploitation of workers and stuff. But now with the tendency towards fair trade and fair payment and things like that, it's making coffee more accessible to people, I think.
Yeah, I would fully agree. There's been some good highlighting of those practices, and I think honestly the rise of more local places has done that, because the local places will emphasize ethical practices, and you know, they also, especially here, they've proven, yes, you may be paying more, but people will pay more for quality. They'll pay more for ethical standards, that they know that the beans will be grown in an ethical manner, and the farmers will be treated ethically. There is that opening up, and it's people do like to know that, you know, the sustainability of it, especially considering how coffee crops have been affected over the years, dealing with things like coffee rust and climate change. You know, in a moment of weird a panic, I was looking up as what alternatives to coffee would be, and there isn't a whole lot out there. As someone who's not a big tea drinker, I am especially interested in the sustainability of coffee throughout the rest of my life. There's some days I just don't know what I would do without it, to be honest. But I fully concur. You can go to a coffee shop and talk about coffee, and no neurotypical is gonna, look at you strange if you info up about it. Everybody gets into it, and that's fantastic.
I think I mean, yeah. I mean, I said there my bit about the fact that all of a sudden, because of everything going on, climate issues, travel issues, and so on, coffee has started to increase in price, which is like, ow. I have tried some of the alternatives, and I'm sorry, no. My local health food shop, they had some stuff there. I tried it, and it's like dirt. It is revolting, and I hope I'm never forced to drink it again. Is there any major, coffee issues? But the bit I adore, love, need is autistic Tigger, and coffee to me go together symbiotically and beautifully and awesomely. And the bit I suppose I'd like to explore as well, because I think this is where I get it. This is where it's come from. I didn't realize this years ago, so I didn't know I was awesomely autistic. But it's been a constant throughout a lot of my life in terms of regulating, calming, focusing, hyper focus, all the rest of it. And certainly in the past 2 or 3 years, I've exploded on my passion for coffee, mostly because of lockdown, really. I just thought, that's it. I can't go to my coffee shop, so I'm going to design a coffee shop at home. But to me, for me, there's the whole routine. Even if I'm out in a coffee shop, it's the whole routine of I have an app, I look for a good coffee shop, I research the coffee shop, I find the coffee shop, I talk to the barista about what beans they use. Sometimes they let me smell the beans. The whole process of me, if I have time, because normally it's when I'm going to work as well, is just a beautiful moment of symmetry and calm in a world where I'm bombarded by, there's that neurotypicalness of the sensory and all the rest of it and so on. And I found it so important. It's such an important part of my life in terms of, it's one of my it's one of my it's one of my tools. It's one of the tools I use to reduce my anxiety. Let alone it just being like a really beautiful drink. I'm interested in exploring the your autistic links, if I can call it that, with coffee as a young autistic person. Yeah, I'm intrigued in exploring that because I've suddenly realised it is really, really, really important to me on a daily basis, and I'd love to see what your thoughts are on that.
So I think honestly, a lot of what David said resonated. I can be focused on coffee, and as you pointed out, asking where the beans are from. None of the questions I will ask in a coffee shop that's locally owned will seem out of place. There is no strange looks or questioning about that. The focus on different brewing methods, or even things like water temperature, or how you actually brew that coffee, that all is seen as just this part of the whole process. It feels natural, and you're able to talk. I'm able to really just fully info dump about coffee, and people, especially in the coffee committee, will respond in that way. They will also info dump, and it's almost like a celebration of that, of we enjoy this. This is fascinating. As David pointed out earlier, when you're talking about learning about beans and all the process of how coffee is grown, harvested, roasted, and turned into coffee, all of that process, I also would concur, is fascinating. And then when you discuss, yeah,
Such a
go ahead.
beginning, isn't it? I love that bit where you go, and I'm like, oh, I can talk about it, and I'm not going to be, I'm not weird, I'm not different, I'm not strange. Whatever the words in other people's mind,
Yeah. You're
you
not
go into it, and you
ostracized
go, oh
for it.
wow, man, and they go, oh wow, you love coffee? Yeah, I do. Boom, and it's like, oh, thank you so much, and it is such a great start to the day when you have that connection and you can just info dump, hyper focus, and everything. God, I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it.
Yeah, they can, especially with if you don't know a new brewing method, nobody ever is like, oh, well, you should know this. It's like, no, they will totally be like, here's how you do this. Like, I have a friend who showed me their AeroPress, and I'd never even known about AeroPress until they showed it off. And that was a fascinating brewing method. And I don't have all of the ones, and that honestly, I'm glad I don't, because I can have other people talk about it, and it really forms a great, also educational discussion. It's not like small talk. You actually can have a productive, informed discussion about it. And it's one of the rare areas where I can actually discuss this with neurotypicals, and it works out really, really well. It's wonderful for that, and it just means a lot. So on the autistic side of things, especially being able to play around with it and the sensory stimulation, the smells, the tastes, the even touching the beans themselves or the grinds, there's a lot of appeal to all of that. It's almost like kind of a sensory buffet to enjoy and have that moment where you can. If and as we talked about earlier, Taylor, you don't always have the time to make espresso. When you do have that time, you can go through the process and really just revel in the starts of when you're grinding the beans, and then you're going through all of the motions of pressing it and then putting it in the machine and running the hot water through it. The whole thing just is fantastic. And yeah, like it really does appeal on so many levels. And I didn't really think about that a whole lot, honestly, until I was Dave and I were talking about this a little bit, I think. And it was like, oh yeah, this would be a great topic. It totally fits with as you said, being awesomely autistic.
Lush. But,
One of the
go on,
things
David.
I love, though, about independent coffee shops is that you can go in, you can ask about the beans, you can ask about the brewing methods, you can ask really any coffee-related question you like. And I think that's where a lot of the chains fall short because they don't have that culture, and it's very obvious it is a profit machine. Whereas the independent shops, they love coffee just as much as we do. And that, for me as an autistic person, it's just amazing to find other people to connect with over such an amazing interest.
It's like some kind of fix, isn't it? I mean, it's like, I think I'll post that on just one of my pages about to be changed, but it's called the Autistic Coffee Shop with Chicken Pritchard, because somebody said to me, it's my partner, said, you're always, when you go for coffee, you're always talking about work, you're always talking about being autistic, awesome autistic, all the rest of it, because I go to coffee shop so much. But I put a post out where I'd had a bad experience of going to a coffee shop first thing in the morning, and it had a negative effect throughout the whole of my day. I then found an independent coffee shop the next day, went there, and had an amazing chat with the guy, and he had a vinyl setup as well. So I was like in heaven for both, yeah. And I arrived at work, and I was like literally skipping, jumping, and dancing. I felt so calm and so regulated, so happy as my autistic self, because I'd had an incredible start to the day all over. Where'd you get your beans from? What grind do you do? What kind of water do you use? Do you filter? And the list went on. And it is, to me, there's a good coffee shop for me brings a moment of clarity, a moment of peace, a moment of focus, a moment of belonging, a moment of utter happiness. And I've got to ask as well. So for me as well, I look, I've done my hand things, I'm getting excited. Sorry, I've got to calm down. The other thing that really gets to me a lot is I love the whole kit and caboodle, if I can use that term. Sometimes I like how they deliver the coffee. I like the style of mug. I'll critique possibly whether the handle is too close and you might burn your finger. I like sometimes the weight of the mug, the style of the mug, all those things to me I love as well. And the whole thing to me is it's just a perfectional package.
Oh, absolutely. Sorry, go ahead, David. You're first.
No, I was just gonna, ask people about their favorite way of preparing their coffee. Spencer, do you have like a favorite way of preparing your coffee?
Oh, that is a loaded question because I am trying to stop myself this holiday season from buying a pour over. I think I'm going to lose that battle because pour overs are absolutely fantastic. And there's enough supplies. I'm like, oh, I may have to actually do it. But so the four methods that I have at my disposal at my own place, of course, a regular, it's a cheap Mr. Coffee $20 drip coffee maker. It's cheap as it can be, but it does the job. Then I have a French press, which is lovely, but it is such a pain to clean, so I don't use it that much. I also have a Chemex, which, if you haven't seen it, it looks like two giant glass funnels bonded together, and you manually pour hot water over the top of it through a filter. And it is like a Chemex is it's time intensive, but it's so worth it. The coffee you get is just phenomenal. And then I also make my own cold brew, which for that I actually have a big old glass jug. I put 6 cups of ground coffee into it, very coarse. I pour water on top of it, and it's called cold brew, but it's just room temperature. I let it brew for 3 days, and then I filter it through my Chemex, which works out really well for all of that. So what would be my favorite method? Oh, if time was never a consideration, I would do a Chemex. I would do a cold brew during the summertime, during warm days, because a cool coffee that has lots of that caffeine is phenomenal. But in the winter, I would do a Chemex hot, because it would just be so fantastic. And the whole process of doing it would be wonderful, because they had to watch it, how it filters through, and pour the hot water on top. So that's what I would say. What about you, Tigger?
That I thought the uncover with this. This is just too much. Is this heaven? If it's summer, I only found cold brew out this summer, and I did my research, went online on eBay, got a Hario cold brew set and loved it. And I'll say when I gave my first cold brew to my partner, she went, "Have you put sugar in this?" And I went, "No, it's a completely different way of brewing, of extraction, and it's just amazing." And we spoke early on about I put it with liqueurs, I put it over ice cream, and it's incredible. It's stunning with ice cubes. I even made cold brew coffee ice cubes. Yep. And added those so I wouldn't reduce the content of the cold brews as me. Cold brew if it's summer, but I only found it this year. I love it. Pour over. Oh my God, get a pour over. I've got a Bodum, which is like a slightly cheaper version of Chemex. Because they're expensive, but they're lush. I've got the Bodum, and I've got my pour over kettle, which I use. I've got a Hario pour over, which is very intensive. You weigh the beans, all the rest of it. I think quick French press, love. It's going to be pour over it in the summer, and in the winter now, if I have the time, it is the Bodum Chemex or the Hario pour over, which I love. And once or twice a week, I do have a Gaggia Classic 2003, which I've modded with the pressure and all the rest of it, put a new steam valve on it, all this stuff I researched on the internet. I do love making that, but that's very intensive. And to be honest, there, I'm still at the point where I may start off the day wanting to get a coffee, and I go through two or three bad coffees before I get the one that I want. So I think most of all, summer cold brew. Winter, I do really like the pour over, and it's just beautiful. But so people can't see, but when you were saying pour over, I was nodding like mad and waving my hands about, man, honestly, pour over.
Yeah,
And
that's
cold
gonna.
brew, wow, this summer, wow, blew me away, cold brew did.
Yeah, that pour over. I think I'm gonna probably get that either probably after right after Christmas. I'll probably do that when they have the sales, because I'll always do that. And yeah, I think you pretty much sold me on that. What about you, David?
So I tried a variation on cold brew this summer, which was absolutely mind-blowing. It was nitro cold brew. So it's cold brew that's chilled with liquid nitrogen. And the way it was done, it was like the perfect temperature, like for the summer. It was like this chilled drink. And the caffeine hit was like, wow. Like, I mean, I'm ADHD and caffeine normally makes me sleepy, but after this, I actually felt alert. And the flavors were just, it was like sweet but bitter but fruity, but there was just so many flavors in it. And I was just blown away by it. And it was this little independent coffee stand at a food festival in Worthing in Sussex. And they were doing nitro cold brew. And I remember I kept going back to them because it was so good. And I need to actually find remember what this little independent coffee stand was called, because I know they're somewhere local to me, and I need to find out where they sell this from, because especially if they can tell me the equipment they use to do it, I am not above buying the equipment to do a
Oh,
nitro cold brew at home.
sorry, got really excited. I'm going to calm down. You've seen the setup I've got. I've got almost every coffee machine you can buy. The nitro is, oh my God, I found it about 3 years ago at a shop in Porthleven, and it was the first shop in Cornwall apparently to have it. It's just like a little glass of Guinness, ice cold with a creamer on top.
Yes.
Wow, it's incredible. And on online, my partner doesn't know this. I hope she doesn't listen to this podcast at all. But that's there's two machines I want to get, and that's one of them. I would love to make my own Nitro, but I'll break this to her gently because it's about 150 quid. Yeah. But oh my God, I'm just like, please, somebody else talk. I'm overloaded here because this is like
No,
one of my favorite things ever.
I'm so glad you brought up Nitro, because the I sodas were okay, like the carbonation's okay, but that Nitro, I love that texture that you get with it, because it's not just the taste, but that texture you have, it's soft, but it's not a harsh, bubble to it. Like it's so nice, and I love that. I will not be able to probably do Nitro with my setup, but I will always enjoy it. And there's a couple of places that do have it. The weird thing is they try to put it in cans, and it never ends up very well in the cans when they do it. Like I'm just like it's not working out that way. But when they do it straight from the tap, it's fantastic. So yeah, I would consider that a wise investment, Tigger. So
So would
I
I.
mean,
So would I.
far be it from me from just, indulging in that, but I would definitely agree. So, but also, yeah, David, I love a good nitro. Absolutely.
This is a note for future David when you listen back to this, buy the equipment to do a nitro cold brew.
Do it. I mean, because we. I mean, I am. Yeah, I'd explained beforehand that we're planning to move in with my partner, and I've explained to her I need a space in the kitchen that's possibly like 3.5 foot wide, floor to ceiling, but all my coffee stuff to go with shelves and everything, and the beans and everything. The other thing I want is I'm after a Rock manual espresso. Those are the two last machines to get, is the Rock and the Nitro, and then I think I'll be happy, and I'll back off, and she might calm down. But I'm so glad you folks brought up Nitro, because it's incredible. It's an incredible drink. And like I said, I think there's only two places in this whole county of Cornwall that do it. And sadly, one of them is like, 2.5 hours away from where I live. But I'll get them as I go up country. But oh, I just want to get the three of us together, which is going to be really difficult. And just to go to a coffee place somewhere and just sample coffees. It would be so lush and so cool.
Absolutely, absolutely. And
Yeah.
yeah, I can't stop thinking about Nitro now. It's more than a drink. It is an experience. It is a liquid experience, and it's an experience that everyone needs to have.
Oh yes. Oh yes. Yeah, if you ever if y'all ever cross the bottom of the Midwest, I will take a day and be like, no, you're gonna tour some places here in Kansas City that are some of my favorites. We won't get to every one of them because there's so many. But yes, and on the other hand, I also want to visit the Boston Tea Party shop. I did not even know that existed, and now that hits upon so many different levels. I'm like, that's an interesting name of a place. I would be very, very interested to see it for sure.
The thing about Boston Tea Party that I've noticed is they do phenomenal coffee by sort of a lot of standards. It's not like the best coffee in the world, but it's still up there in my opinion. And it's quite affordable coffee as well. But the reason the coffee is so affordable is because if you buy food in Boston Tea Party, you have to take out a second mortgage.
Wow. Is it worth it for the mortgage, or is it, overpriced?
Food is, I mean, I can't complain. It's pretty good food, but that's not why people go there. You go there because, firstly, for the coffee. The coffee is incredible, and I have it on good authority from my friends who are as big about tea as we are about coffee that their tea is pretty good as well. So that's the main thing. People go there for the tea and coffee, not for the food.
That's fantastic. Tigger, I was going to ask if would you like me to tell the worst cup of coffee story
Yes,
I've
yes,
ever
yes,
had?
yes. Yes, please. Yes,
So
please. Yes, please.
we've told these wonderful places, and I hope this doesn't get me in trouble with the place, but it was probably around, I think, 2012 or 2013. I was working for the university part-time, and the project principal investigator was able to get funding for me to go with them to present about the project at a conference in Washington, D.C., which is wonderful. I'm like, this is fantastic. And we actually stay at the Ritz-Carlton in DC, which was the probably the nicest hotel I've ever been in as far as places I've been to. That was a big, just very upscale establishment. So we go there, and first day, it's just fantastic. I'm having all these wonderful conversations. It's a disability conference, so there's a lot of other people in the disability realm that I can speak to, I can discuss with, I can talk to. We have conversations throughout the night, and I don't go to bed till like 1 in the morning. Well, the next day starts at 7 a.m., so I need to be awake. So I get up, do all my stuff, I go downstairs, and I start slinging back the coffee, and it tastes so terrible. It tasted like a combination of coffee cleaner and burning tires, which you don't want those tastes. Those tastes together are just terrible. And my thought at that time was, I thought, well, it's so bitter, it must be the Robusta blend instead of the Arabica. And the two main blends of coffee, you have Arabica, which is the tasty one, Robusta they use for like putting caffeine and other things. So I just thought they had just was very caffeinated. Well, after the fourth cup of drinking this just bitter swill, I thought, nothing's happening. I'm not getting that rush. I don't feel awake. I'm still as tired as I was. And I'm just like, I wonder what's happening. So I turned towards one of the servers and I asked them where they get their beans from. I said, where do you get your beans? And they said, beans. I said, for the coffee. And they said, oh no, it's not made from beans. And I said, what do you mean it's not made from beans? What is it made from? And they told me, oh, it comes from a syrup. Come to find out that there was this bag of this syrupy coffee flavored swill, and they cut it open and squirt it into boiling water and then put that into the coffee things, and that was what they would serve. So it was a syrup, and no wonder, like, there was no caffeine content to it whatsoever. And I was like, I felt like I've been lied to. This very fancy Ritz-Carlton big establishment hotel. Like, you kind of would expect this, like maybe a Holiday Inn or a Best Western. You're like, oh, well, it's gonna be cheap, but they cheaped out so badly. And I wasn't, so I instantly put down the coffee, and at the first break, I race across the street from the hotel to this local gas station, and I pick up a couple of these Starbucks energy drinks because I was desperate and I needed something with that it was just flavored. And I picked up like two of them. I take them back and I just chug them down, and I get through the rest of the day. But I will never forget being told it was a syrup. I'm like, wow, a syrup? I have never heard of anybody doing a syrup before. Like, even decaf is usually beans.
That is just bad. That is just
Yeah.
wrong. That is just repulsive.
Oh, it
Just for
was.
the context of people who are listening and can't see what was going on screen, as Spencer told that story, Tigger was holding his head in despair, and I had a look on my face like I just witnessed some kind of major disaster,
Sorry.
because it's like the most horrific story for coffee I've ever heard. And I thought my story of going all the way up to Newcastle for some reason, going to a Starbucks and it tasting of cleaning fluid was a bad story. But by comparison, no,
That's bad. That's bad. That's bad.
if your
If,
coffee is made from syrup, it's not coffee. If
no.
we're in vicinity, I would hug you and apologize for some reason, because that's something you should never have to go through. That's really repulsive. That's really gross. Sorry.
Oh,
You mean
no, it
fake
was.
coffee made from
syrup? If so, you may be entitled to compensation.
Oh, they should have paid me for the two cans of Starbucks I had to buy at the gas station. But I mean, it did the job. The fun part was, I later on, there was another autistic presenter who is non-speaking, and they kept like making coffee and putting milk into it, but then getting a different cup, and they would make it differently each time. And they kept saying, so he's like, why do they keep doing this? I'm like, oh, I know why. It's because they're trying to get rid of that horrific taste in the coffee, and they can't get the ratio right. That's what they're trying to do. It's so terrible. I even told my PI, I'm like, don't get the coffee. It is horrific. And the thing is, like I said, you would expect the Ritz-Carlton would buy beans or at least some grounds of something. You wouldn't be expecting just this shortcoming. I had no idea. So from now on, if I ever am at a place that has that, just a word of advice for everyone, ask them where they get their beans from. If they tell you it's a syrup, as David said, it's not coffee.
It's not coffee. Not coffee at all. God, that is bad, man. I don't, in a sense, I don't. I've learned not to drink at certain places. What I have is I'm very particular about my coffee. And when I'm with a communicative partner, like my partner's there, we have been to places and there's this moment where the filter forgets to go on. And we went to one coffee shop and we had coffee. We were quite near the place that they served us. I'm going to say it was a fancy garden center in my locality. And I sat down and I said, "This is really disappointing." I said this all out loud. I said, "You have a really nice environment. You have a very nice Cornish ware, which is a blue and white kind of pottery, which is well known in Cornwall, except this was red and cream, which is a lovely combination. I've got some cups myself." I said, "You've got all this going for it, etc. The presentation is great, the cup is weighted properly and everything, and you sip the coffee." I said, "And it's absolutely abhorrent." My partner looked at me and she went, I went, "Ah, okay." And I forgot the filter bit, as you do sometimes, yeah. And I went, "Okay, but when I do that in coffee shops, I will love what I'm seeing. But I won't drink it, and I'm at that stage now where I will, if I get a coffee and I don't like it, I actually won't finish it. Hence the joy of that portable coffee setup I've got. I know then what I'm going to get. I can grind the beans in the morning and so on. But if I go somewhere and I take a couple of sips, I'll just sit there and go, ugh, and find something else to drink, or leave the coffee shop and hunt for another one, because I can't. I now I'm at the point where I refuse to have bad coffee pass my lips." And another great moment I had, well, this is great things rather than bad things, was we were going to see a friend of my partner's. And I just said, "Can I take my own coffee with me?" And my partner went, "Right, okay, I don't know how she'll take it, but yeah, okay." I went, "Well, that way I'm guaranteed a great start to the evening. I'm guaranteed good coffee. I'm slightly anxious that it's somebody new. I'll be more relaxed with a good coffee with me." The list goes on, yeah. And it was one of the best evenings I've ever had. And the person was great. The person would just help yourself to hot water. I went, "Thank you." And I just had, two or three filter coffees with my coffee grinder list with that evening. I was in heaven. So for me, if it's really bad coffee, I'm at the point now where I almost refuse to drink it. Hence, I bought that portable thing, because then I theoretically I don't have to go through that again, really.
Yeah, I that's you know what, honestly, I don't usually mind if people do that sort of thing. Like, the only time I would mind doing that is if somebody said, bring, like, I actually had a moment where someone said, hey, bring your cold brew for this event, and then they made coffee during the time. I'm like, well, I've got cold brew. If you're going to make stuff, I would just rather have what you've made, because I trust you with that coffee. Your coffee is good. My stuff's good too. But, how much coffee do we actually need for this event, depending on what goes on? It's, yeah, I have no problem with people bringing their stuff, especially with even outside of coffee. Like, if you have food allergies or other things, like, whatever makes you the most comfortable is where I'm at. I don't really take much offense because, a new thing that's been popping up has been the you can't eat at everybody's house. Which I've learned in certain contexts that is definitely true. There are some people you don't want to eat there because you don't know what they do with some of the food items, so you're not sure. And it's just I am way more open to that. So it's like if you brought coffee over to my place, I would not be offended. Actually, probably what would happen is I would want to try what you had.
Yeah.
So you'd be like, hey, share a little bit of that with me.
I'm going to ask one question, because there is my Christmas present this year is an apron, so that when I make my coffee, especially my espresso coffee, I'm still researching it, but I can have a proper apron. I know. I just really I've got a cooking apron, which is a great big Tigger on it, and I'd really like a coffee apron for me as well. But the one thing I have to say is you've worked as a barista. You've worked as a barista. I can say it one more time. You've worked as a barista. And there's an element of wow there. What was that like?
So there's being able to kind of learn that experience was interesting. The one thing that people aren't really familiar with, and why your coffee at different shops may taste differently during the weather changes, because the pressure and the weather will have an effect because people open and close that door, and you will have to adjust your grind, you adjust the way you make the espresso, and you will actually have to even try it throughout the day. So you'll probably see them. You'll be, as a barista, you may be taking a few espresso shots per day, not just to have them, but also to make sure that you've got your equipment calibrated right, because sometimes it changes. You know, in the morning, if it's like a snowy day in the dead of winter, and you come in and it's still pretty dry, but as people come in and everything, it starts to, the pressure and the temperature and the humidity all changes a little bit. You got to keep that calibrated. That was something that was, that took a lot longer time to learn than I thought it would. But also the people you meet is incredible. So many different stories with different coffee orders and everything, but it's definitely, it's a skill. No one has this stuff totally inborn. Knowing how to make the espresso, knowing how to steam milk, usually you'll see temperature gauges, but the temperature gauge is always a little bit behind, and getting that proper hand feel, like you can touch the side of that metal milk container and knowing that's the right temperature, is something that you develop over time. So much of it is just stuff that happens that you're not even aware of, that this automatically goes through, that you learn that it's very, very different. And when you brew at home, you get that time. When you're working at a place, you don't get as much, and so you're trying to work through. But it was very rewarding because you get that smell around you all the time. You get to kind of enjoy, and the camaraderie you have with your other baristas, they're working with you, especially if they're more knowledgeable, they will definitely help and assist and try to teach. And that's always welcome. And overall, honestly, I would love to run or even work as a barista again at some point, but I don't know if it's ever going to happen again, but I did enjoy it. It's just very unique.
Go
ahead. Sorry.
It's just one of my fantasies. I've got this thing in my old age that I'd love an inclusive coffee shop in all its forms. And that's the kind of like thing I'd love to do. But I definitely, at some point in my life, I think I have to. I want to work in a coffee shop as a barista. I want to do that. It's actually one of my life goals. And so I'm jealous that you have. And all that insight you just said was gorgeous. Wow, like lush, yeah? I really want to do that a lot.
The one thing I have noticed, and this was something that one of my friends, who I would invite them for coffee, and they would never go. And at one point, they're like, look, I'm sorry, don't go. I do like coffee, but I don't like going to coffee shops, and I don't want you to be offended. I'm like, why would I be offended? And after a discussion, we found out it was a sensory thing, and it was a sound thing. Specifically, it was that grinder.
Yeah.
As you both know, those grinders are loud. And I could get used to it because I just was able to kind of work with that. Because some sounds are okay. Like it really depends on the sound. If it's consistent and I can stop it, I usually am okay. But if it's something that's spontaneous or just happens, you know, and just I don't hear it coming, literally, that will bother me. But they were like, I can't say them. Like, you know what? That's totally okay. We can do something different. So I tried to find other ways around that. But that was something I found very unique. I was like, oh yeah, that would definitely be it. Now I'm on the hunt for quieter grinders. I have a hand one I got for like $12 that I love, but it only makes about 2 cups of grind at a time, so not easy for espresso. But yeah, it's definitely, but there's so much to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier on about I've just upgraded my Bose headphones eBay wise, just to a pair of 700s, and they do travel with me everywhere. So those, I sit down in a coffee shop, flick that on, and I am in heaven. The grinders, when they start, do frighten me, do raise my anxiety levels considerably. And you're right, there are. I mean, I got a Sage grinder. Is it Breville Sage? I can't remember which it is in America. And as a multi-purpose grinder, but I am looking towards a more espresso-focused grinder, I must confess. But I know there are models out there that are louder than others. I've been looking at that as well and thinking, oh, that's interesting to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll tell a bit of a story here. It's not really a story. It's more something that's happening at the moment. But I live in this little village in the north of Brighton. And my mother is the vicar in this village, and she has her church is it's basically a converted barn that's been turned into a church. It's a couple hundred years old, and it was turned into a church in the 50s. And coming off of that sort of barn, now church, is what we call the village hall. And my mother at the moment is trying to get funding together to turn part, expand the village hall and build a coffee shop on the side that will exclusively employ disabled people in the management, in the, the everyday employees. So it would be entirely staffed by disabled people, which I think is really cool. But I have said I only have one condition, Mum, and that is that I get to pick the beans. Because if there's going to be a coffee shop in my home village, I'm going to make sure it's good coffee.
Oh yeah.
Definitely.
Oh yes. Definitive. Absolutely. Yeah. We actually have a couple of places. Not, I think we have one place maybe here in the state that does that. My only issue is because I've been to one, and I actually asked some questions because I'm curious always when it comes to these places. And I was like, so how are you teaching them the different barista skills? How are you teaching about the steam, about the milk steamer or the grind or other things? And unfortunately, they're like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, all the skills that come with this, even things like knowing what coffee should smell like. Like if even if they have various, sensory issues with, touch and smell and hearing, if they're wanting to work here and they enjoy it, how are you developing those skills? Because these are things that are developed over time. They take months sometimes to get it really quite right. And even then, sometimes as a barista, you don't get it right. Like I will say honestly, as a barista, I never was able to make the rosette on the top, that beautiful leaf design. I never could get it. I never could get it. I was terrible, could never get it. So when I asked them about this, they were just like, we don't know what you're talking about. And it turned out they were only doing like drip coffee and then just pouring it. Like they wouldn't do much beyond it. And I was so disappointed because I saw it like you said, it's a great opportunity. This would be wonderful, but it just feels like, at least here in America, I don't know how it is in the UK. Sometimes here in America, there is a limitation on these places that the people running it who are neurotypical will typically just limit things to a certain extent and not develop those. And that's un it's an unfortunate part of that. So I hope it's different, or at least different with the place that you're describing, David.
I think it will be. I mean, both my mother and I are autistic anyway, and we both have a passion for making sure that people who might be shut out of typical employment have access to this. So obviously being a barista comes with, like you said, it's a skill set, and it's not a simple skill set either. So there is a wider conversation to be had around how will the staff be trained on how to make a good cup of coffee? Because that's something that people don't talk about enough, is the fact that you can have the best beans in the world, but if you don't prepare your coffee right, you're not going to have a good cup of coffee.
I mean, I'm lucky. There's a place in Nunavut, which is an extremely awesome, inclusive coffee shop, and that is very nice. And they're taking the time there to, support a wide range of individuals with regards to the proper preparation of coffee and food. I found it by chance about 3 months ago, and I'm so glad I did. I intend to go back there again soon, which is gorgeous. So, but you're right. There are some places that I don't know if I want to use the term tokenistic. I will, where they do, and then you just see it's very basic stuff, and that's like, no, really, you've got a great opportunity here from a sensory viewpoint, a learning viewpoint, an inclusive viewpoint to get it right. So I hope, with the way moving forward, a lot more places will realize how important it is to have the full range of skills. And that is really awesome to do so. I'm very conscious we are over an hour now, and I've got like 50,000 other questions still to ask. He's like, oh, can we ask? Can we do a third one? No. So the barista thing really interests me, and I think it's the little nuances from my viewpoint I mean, the only time I really focus on making coffee is when I do the gadget. And like I said to you, I think already, you know, sometimes the first couple of times I do it, the grind's not right, and I don't get it sorted. And I, you know, I was even researching the other day about how hard or soft the water is where I live, and whether or not I should be looking at water filter in terms to make it taste better. I follow a guy called James Hoffman, I think it is, on YouTube, and I regularly like looking at his stuff, because he's like a coffee guru in Britain. And I like what he says, and I've just been researching so there in terms of the concentration and the effort and the so on. So the only time I really focus at that level is when I do once or twice a week. If that at the moment really think about using the gadget, and then once I've used, you know, one set of beans, I do that kind of setup for the rest of the time I use it. When a new set of bean comes in, I have to start from scratch again and all the rest of it. But there is something about that. I'm going to go back to the pour over. French press, there's something about you pour it in, you grind it, you mix it up, it's there, it's quick. But to me, the middle ground between the two has got to be that bit with the pour over, where you're still concentrating on the grind and you're taking your time to pour it with that circular motion, and you mix it up ever so slightly and you wait for it to pour through. So there's, to me, that's kind of, I'm just telling you, get a pour over. There's that middle bit of the ground, yeah, where you're doing the, I know, I'm sorry.
No,
It's just,
no
still
need to
something about it
apologize.
which is gorgeous with that bit, which I still think means a lot from a, you know, from my autistic Tigger sense. I love the pour overs.
Yeah, I can just I'll just say, well, you know, look, Tigger and David recommended it, and who might argue with them about getting a pour over? That's just proof right there. You know, it's look, it's from the experts in more than one area. So, you know, it's like, look, you know, David's recently wrote a book. Okay, so there, that counts for something about the coffee scene. I don't know how I'm going to link that together, but I will find a way. I'll be like, look,
There's a way.
yeah, and you know, Tigger drinks coffee as a matter of course to get through their day, and
You know, it's important to note that I, as a published author, coffee is a very important part of that process. You know, you can't write a good book without a good coffee, in my opinion. Like, so, admittedly, in the course of writing my book, I arguably drank too much coffee, or at least my doctor would say I drank too much coffee. But my response to that is, I wrote a book, so who cares? Well,
exactly. Yeah.
we've got to bring in as well that not only is just pamper daytime, not only has young David written a book, he's also recently become a
Father.
father. Woo-hoo!
Hooray.
You know, from the podcasting world, we've got to give you congratulations for that too. Giving birth to a book, and
Yeah, so
that's
I
as good
have
as it. You
my
know what I
brain
mean?
baby and my actual baby.
Which is awesome. I'm conscious that it's we're knocking on for over an hour again. We try and be tight on time of these. But I don't know what to go out on, because we've done your stim before. And I mean, have you got any other questions you want to ask David? I could literally, I just want to, the next thing I want to do is have a video of you making coffee. I want to talk about how you make the coffee. I want to talk about how you do the pressure bit. I want to talk about how you think about water temperature. All this is going through my head, but that's 4 hours of
Okay,
breathing on.
I know the question to close on, because we've done the stim question before. We're talking about
Real.
coffee. So, Spencer, what notes do you look for when you're smelling coffee?
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
Oh boy. Okay. I wish I had my smelly box. Well, not my smelly box, but a smelly box. The 16 essential flavors of coffee. I enjoy a I it, really it kind of depends. I'm much more preference to a brown sugar, fruity, kind of that more of a bright coffee. Whereas you prefer the darker roast. I'm actually a big fan of the light roast. I like a coffee that has a lot more depth to it. I'm a sucker for, of course, some chocolate notes too. I love chocolate. I am not an expert by any means, but a good dark chocolate note in coffee, along with some fruitier notes, some of the berry-esque taste to it is just phenomenal. I love that. So those are definitely the ones I would go for. What about you?
I mean, for me, I do love some chocolate notes. I do. And if it's got like those dark chocolate notes, and this may be an unpopular opinion, but I do like my coffee to have a bitterness about it. Sort of, I like to think of it as the playful bitterness that matches my disdain for the current state of society. If it's got chocolate notes and is as bitter as my disdain for society, that's a good coffee for me.
I love that. That was phenomenal. That was beautiful. What about you, Tigger?
Sorry, I'm still that was just lush. That was poetic. That's why you're an author, man. That was poetically gorgeous and lush. I have to say, I'm going to go with the coffee I've got at the moment. A great friend of mine who is a coffee connoisseur herself came round evening meal, and she brought me two locally roasted coffees from somewhere in Liscard in Cornwall. And the one I've got at the moment, I was trying to look for it online, but I've got it in the other room. I think it was actually Mexican based, and it was a light roast, and it's got this. It's something of it, which is new to me, but it's got a hint of maple in it, and you can smell it as you grind it, and you can smell it just you taste it. It was that normal combination of coffee to me at the moment. I've just finished it actually. And it's a gift, and I know I can get it. I'm going to hunt out and get it. I think get another pack for Christmas. But it's just got this mapleness about it, and I'm at the moment. I'm like, wow. Hence, I've gone for a whole bag very quickly, I must confess. So I go, wow, that's nice. Wow, that's nice. Wow, that's nice. Typically, it depends. I like a strong dark roast at times with a good chocolatey kind of like oomph to it. And on occasions, I like the caffeine-ness, of a strong blonde as well. Which I kind of like those, but at the moment this maple one I got from a local roaster is like wow, and I just you grind it and you can smell it as you do it, you extract it and that crema bit, oh it's gorgeous. So that's me really. I'm still getting over David's eloquent, awesome, gorgeous bit there about society, which was superb.
Wondering. Okay, well, I think that brings us to the end of the podcast, but yeah, so thank you very much, everyone, for listening. And thank you so much, Spencer, for
Oh,
coming and
Spencer,
talking to us.
you are
Always
just
a pleasure.
lush. We got to do another one. You are just lush. I just, oh, yeah, can we do a video one next time? We see you making coffee. We can ask questions. I'm over the moon with this one. It has been so cool. Sorry, and so awesome, and so wicked, and so lush. And those different flavors you spoke about, I'm going to go off and research that like mad now because I need to know more. But thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Thank you so much indeed. I loved it.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. And after the holiday in December, I will, if you reach out and say, hey, do this, I will record a video of what I do with the cold brew or something like here's what I do, and then we can go from there. But always, I super enjoy being here. I love the podcast. And yeah, after this, I'm going to go drink the rest of my coffee and go to work. So fantastic. Love being here. And yeah, just keep on.
Thank you, man. What time is it there for you?
It is 2:45 p.m. I had class this morning, and then I have work from 3 to 7. I'm actually a writing consultant for my university's writing studio. We do a lot of work with like papers and statements and scholarship essays and everything else. So students can come by and say, "Hey, I need some help with writing," and I do my best to make sure their voice comes through, even if it's a paper they don't want to write. We work with them, and it's a fantastic experience. I'm very pleased that I'm able to do this.
Oh, lush, man. Thank you. It's about 8:45 here, UK time.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much for getting the time. It's been brilliant.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. And this has been the Especially Interesting Podcast from Orcademy. We have been your co-hosts, Tigger Pritchard, and I am David Gray Hammond, reminding you that happiness can't be found in the bottom of a bottle, but sweet solace can be found in the bottom of a China cup. So take care, everyone.
Bye all.
Goodbye.
Thank you again, Spencer. Absolutely lush.
Thank you.